welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. Today on the show, I'm going to have back Dr. Jack Kripsak, who is a sports medicine expert, and we're going to be joined by several listeners of the Essential Tennis Podcast who have questions for him having to do with a wide variety of topics, having to do with injury, also weightlifting and training for tennis, and other specific things as well. So let's go ahead and get right to it. Sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction. On today's podcast, I'm going to have Dr. Jack Kripsak back on the show, who's it's always great to have you on the show, Dr. Jack, and you've given us a lot of good information over several podcasts here on the Essential Tennis Podcast. Welcome back to the show again.
Thank you very much, Ian. It's always fun to be on the show.
And Dr. Jack and I, in doing our last episode, we were talking afterwards and thought that it would be a lot of fun to have some listeners with us on the program that could actually interact with Dr. Jack and ask him follow-up questions, and also so Dr. Jack could ask them questions as well, because a lot of times it's difficult for Dr. Jack to give really the best advice he can without knowing some specifics from the person who's asking the question. So we're both really looking forward to having several listeners on the show with us. And we're going to go through and give a brief introduction here. First of all, we have Royce. And as we go down the list, I'd like all of you guys to just briefly tell us your name, where you're located, and a brief history of your playing background, how long you've been playing, etc., so that everybody gets an idea of who we're talking to and how it can kind of most closely relate to their own game. So, Royce, everybody knows a little bit of information about yourself, but why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell us how long you've been playing and what your playing background is. Go ahead, buddy.
Been playing for as long as I can remember. Had my first experience on a tennis court back when, actually as soon as I could walk in diapers, that I would be on the tennis court. I didn't have my first lesson until I was 8, though, and beyond that, just played some college tennis with you, Ian, and frustrated you to know.
You did. Congratulations on that.
I got to get any cheap shot I can get in there. I've been teaching now for a little over 7 years, currently working out in Tacoma, Washington.
All right, good stuff. Next up is Angie. Angie, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, I'm in Edmond, Oklahoma. I've just been playing a couple of years, really just trying to get better. Before that, I played occasionally pick up a tennis racket. Somebody would say, let's go play tennis. But the last couple of years, I've been taking lessons. And then really, just from probably around the first of the summer till now, I went from playing like once a week, then with a lesson, so twice a week, to 5 times a week.
Awesome.
Getting into the leagues at the place where I play and doing some doubles drills. So I've increased it quite a bit just in the past few months. So, and it's fun.
All right, great. Great to hear that you've really kind of got the bug and you're starting to really get into it. Next up, we have Joe. Joe, tell us about yourself. Joe, are you there? Okay, we'll try to come back to Joe. Next up, we got John. John, what's up?
Hi, guys. I'm 47. I got dragged kicking and screaming into tennis about 5 years ago, and I wish I could have Dr. Jack as my doubles partner, because I get all kinds of those little nagging injuries that we talk about on the forums.
Hey, I love playing doubles. Anytime you want to hit, let's go.
The problem is we're on opposite coasts.
I know. That's a shame.
John, I didn't know you've only been playing for 5 years, and you're playing at what, around a 4.0 level right now, about that?
Yeah, I'm right on the border of 4.0, 3.5. I don't really know what my rating is.
Okay, great. Good job. And Angie, what level would you put yourself at right now?
Oh, right now I just kind of just moved into 3-0.
Okay, great.
Not real high, but, you know, getting there.
Awesome. And we'll try to go back to Joe. Joe, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah. Sorry about that. Go ahead. Tell us where you are, how long you've been playing, and just a little bit about your playing background.
I live in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I've actually only been seriously playing tennis since April, so about 5 or 6 months. But I have become totally obsessed with it, so trying really hard to get better. Before that, it was pretty much just some casual hitting around with my wife and things like that.
Okay. Awesome. Well, this really makes me happy. It's really cool to hear from such a wide range of player types. We've got Royce, who's actually a teaching professional. He's been playing his entire life. We have players who've been playing just a couple years and somebody who's just been playing a couple months. So the questions that these guys are going to ask are probably going to be very applicable to many people listening, and this is going to be a lot of fun. So let's go ahead and go in that order that I introduced everybody, and we'll start off with Royce. Royce, go ahead and ask Dr. Jack your question, and we'll go from there. Go ahead, Royce.
All right. I guess from a teaching perspective, that people tend to mimic what they see the pros doing. And, you know, one thing that's becoming more and more common are the pros using smaller grips to kind of allow the racket to kind of whip through the strike zone and, in essence, make the shots a little bit more risky. What impact do you really feel like this will have with the casual player developing more serious wrist issues outside of just, like, the tendonitis, et cetera, you know, stuff dealing with, you know, the ligaments and, you know, TFCC tears, et cetera?
Well, that's interesting. There's actually been two studies that can address that. The first one would show, or has shown, that the actual size of the grip, whether you use a larger grip or smaller grip than the measured grip that you would expect to use, really won't make a difference in incidence of injuries to the wrist or forearm. So the actual grip size will not really matter. What will matter is the type of grip, and I've told Ian about an article that was published a few months ago, and it compared Eastern grip, Western grip, semi-Western grip, and continental grip in a group of non-professional, relatively competitive tennis players in Italy. And it showed that the Western and semi-Western grips had the highest incidence of injury, mostly along the ulnar or the pinky side of the wrist, as compared to Eastern injuries, which had a lower incidence of injuries along the radial or thumb side of the wrist, and the continental grip ended up not having any injuries.
Hmm.
So based upon those two studies, I would say that it's your grip style more than your grip size which will dictate what type of injury that you have. And if you're concerned about the TFCC's injury, or the triangular fibrocartilage injuries, they weren't really that common, but did show up in, 10% of the injuries that were there, and there was an overall 13% incidence of wrist injuries in a group of, a group of over 300 players. So while you wouldn't think that wrist injuries are that common, it accounted for almost one out of every 10 players had a wrist injury. And the grip did have the type of grip had the biggest reflection of injury for that.
So Royce, what type of grip do you use? How extreme is your forehand grip?
Mine is about as close to a full Western as a semi-Western can get.
All right, so you're pretty far over there.
Yeah, which could explain, you know, a little bit of the stress. Some people know I. This was actually going to also be a follow-up question as well. Where within that, did it say where the injury was located on the ulnar side? Was it with the UT, the ulnar triquetral ligament, or where was that the injury is located specifically?
Okay, sure. It's with Western grips, there were extensor carpal narus injuries, 11 out of 30. You had the 11 out of 50 injuries to the wrist were the extensor carpal naris tendon. The triangular fiber cartilage, there was three. And then there was one extensor common extensor tendon injury. And with the semi-Western, the extensor carpal naris had 16 injuries, and there was two triangular fiber cartilaginous injuries and two common extensor injuries. So there really were far more on that ulnar side of the wrist, and those were basically the three most common types.
I'm glad that I don't have to go down that list. Anything else, Rice?
Oh, Ian? Yeah, no. All I can tell you, Ian, is they are not fun. So be thankful.
Yeah, Rice has had a real rough run of it physically in his playing career. How many wrist surgeries specifically have you had, Rice?
I've had just wrist surgeries. I've had three.
Okay.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, Royce, this article, if you want to Google it, it's called Wrist Injuries in Non-Professional Tennis Players, and it's from the American Journal of Sports Medicine, and this is volume 37, number 4, I forget what month it was. It was less than a year ago.
Okay.
Yeah. You should be able to find it through the American Journal of Sports Medicine. It should pop up.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
I think you'll find it very interesting. It's nice. They have a very nice pictorial about they take the butt handle of a tennis racket, and they assign numbers like on that of an hour on an hourglass, not an hourglass, but on a clock face, and then they show you where on your base knuckle and heel pad of your hand, where to place it on the different numbers to determine where your grips are. It's a very nice picture, and then it has a nice breakdown of the different injuries in the different locations with some commentary on why they think this all happens. Not really much about treatment. It was more or less just a showing of what happens with these different kind of grips. It was supposedly the only study of its kind so far.
All right. Well, good stuff. Royce, thanks a lot for your question. And let's go ahead and move on to Angie, who I know has been having some problems with tennis elbow. Angie, go ahead and ask Dr. Jack your question.
Okay. I actually just recently started having that problem. I had kind of changed my forehand, which I changed back to the one that doesn't hurt it. And when I was playing kind of really tight, I had a lot of pain. And so it kind of kept on. So I was wondering about, you know, going and practicing and just having my smoother stroke, which doesn't hurt it. So I went ahead with it, but I was actually kind of worried about it, thinking, well, when do you decide when to sit out? Because obviously there's going to be sometimes when you play with pain, like occasionally with foot pain or with arm pain, but is there any way to tell when it's dangerous?
Sure. If you have a tennis elbow injury, when you go to make a fist or a grip or grab something or pinch mm-hmm. something between your fingers and your thumb, your four fingers and your thumb, and that elicits a lot of pain on a regular daily basis, just doing your activities of daily living, then this is something that's becoming more of a progressive problem. The two more common mechanisms of action for a tennis elbow are going to be on your backhand, where your wrist becomes weak and it flips backwards, so you don't have a good firm wrist on your backhand, or if you roll your wrist over on your forehand. Ian, anything else to throw into that as far as technique goes, causing tennis elbow?
Well, in my experience, most people who experience tennis elbow are not properly making use of the kinetic chain, meaning they're not radiating their strength or their power from their core outwards. They're not using the biggest parts of their body very well. And because of that, to create spin and power on their shots, they end up using the smaller parts of their body instead. Their wrist or forearm are being predominantly used. And, you know, when you do that over and over and over again, it's only a matter of time till you get some kind of overuse injury.
Good, great. So, Angie, what I would say to you is if you've got a pot of boiling water on the stove and you can't pick it up with one hand, it's time to start to go see, think about seeing somebody, and that would be reason enough, you know, to curtail your playing for a while. If you're out playing on the tennis court and initially it's not bothering you, and it begins to bother you more and more as the match goes on, then I think you're looking really at a technique problem, because you're obviously doing something that's going to aggravate it. If you can't get out there and make one or two shots right off the bat, it's just going to get worse, and you'll really need some attention for that.
Yeah, actually, I've been playing. I played today, and I didn't hurt while I was playing. So I think maybe I'm fixing my technique, but there is still a little bit of residual kind of soreness.
If you shake someone's hand, does it hurt?
Don't shake that many people's hands. No, not really. If
afraid
I grasp,
of the swine flu. Afraid of the swine flu, huh?
If I grasp something, you know, kind of squeeze it, there's just a tiny little dull pain right now.
Okay. So, and
so
how
not
long
real
had,
sharp.
And how long have you had this for?
It's just been about a month or so.
Okay. So it's probably getting at that point where it may not be a tendonitis anymore, or it may be becoming a tendinosis. And, you know, that flex bar that someone wrote in about recently is a great exercise. If you've all read that New York Times article that was posted, it involves a technique called eccentric strengthening. So you're stretching the muscle tendon junction as you're strengthening it. And by doing so, you break up some of the scar tissue that forms with the tendinosis as it becomes arthritic and no longer inflamed. So that actually would be something I would at this point have you do, because that might be a really, really good exercise for you to prevent it from getting worse.
Okay, and it's called a flex bar?
Yes, yes. And you can find it online. Because I knew that people were asking about it, so I did a little Google search. It came up, and there's one or two online stores, physical therapy stores, that you can get it at, and I don't think it was very expensive. And that New York Times article does have a nice video on the proper technique on how to do the exercise. It's very easy. It makes a lot of sense. We utilize that same principle, and I've talked about this on some of the other podcasts, for Achilles tendinosis, where you stand up on your toes and then lift up one leg and slowly lower yourself down on the other leg so that your heel drops over the edge of a step. And that is stretching the tendon and muscle as you're strengthening it. And you do that like 15 times. And in this instance, you're doing the same thing. You're loading up that tendon on the wrist and then you're just relaxing it and stretching it slowly as you strengthen it. So it's the same concept, and it works really, really nice.
Okay, thanks. Try that.
Sure. Good luck with that.
All right. Angie, thank you very much. And let's move on to Joe now. Joe, what's your question for Dr. Jack?
Yeah, my question is regarding weight training, specifically for tennis. there's a lot of ways to weight train depending on what your goals are, size, power, definition, etc. And for instance, you can use more weight with less reps, less weight with more reps, more time or less time between sets, etc. So I'm wondering which weight training strategies best complement training for tennis.
For tennis, I want to make you the best athlete you can be. That's the most important thing. So as opposed to a football interior lineman, defensive or offensive lineman, where you're going to want to do those three sets of 6 to 8, maybe 10 reps, really pushing it hard to really gain size and strength, which even now is not as often utilized as it used to be. Or as opposed to an endurance runner, where I might have you do 15 to 20 reps, one set each muscle group twice a week because I just want to tone up your muscles. I would say I wanted to see you in a good, well-rounded exercise program where you're doing some weight training, some plyometric training, some speed training. There's a lot that's important in becoming a good tennis player. There's a lot of different movements that you have to perform on a tennis court. You have to be light on your feet. You have to have quick feet, lateral movements, quick acceleration. If you have a drop shot that you have to attack, or serve and volley, you have to explode off that serve and get to the net. You have to maintain good balance when you do that split step so that you have to cut one way or the other to address a ball coming at you. So there's really a lot of things that you need to address in terms of your conditioning and training. That P90X thing that a lot of you guys have written in about is very nice. Another thing you can do is go to like Nike, and they have that Spark program, speed, power, agility, reaction, and quickness. So those are two good places you can go. And of course, our website that we sponsor through Ian's tennis website, SomersetSportsPerformance.com, you can get a lot of information there also as far as programming if you sign up for an online personal trainer. But what you really want to do is you want to have a well-rounded program. You want to do some weight work. You want to do some plyometric work. You want to do some speed and agility work and just keep things well-rounded. I would say if you did, on your weights, one set, 12 reps each muscle group, always remembering to do antagonistic or opposite muscle groups whenever you do your weights, that would be great. Also, always remember that you don't want to do the same thing every time you go to the gym or work out, because you want to do different exercises to strengthen the same muscle groups just for variety so that your muscles don't get stale. How many times have I seen people, and even myself, you know, go to the health club three days a week for 2 months and you know, you're showing some increase in strength, and then you go out and play a game of flag football, you play some soccer with your kids, and all of a sudden you're cutting and turning in different ways that you don't do at the health club, and you're sorer than the last month that you've worked out, even though you've been lifting more weights.
Yeah.
Totally different movement patterns and recruitment of different muscles. So you really have to try to do a lot of different things to get a very well-rounded exercise program. I mean, tennis, when you play good tennis, that's a pretty aggressive sport. I mean, you see those guys going all out. I mean, some of the balls that those guys tracked down at the U.S. Open were just phenomenal. And it's just amazing the shape that these athletes are in. And to be able to cut and twist and turn and your reaction speed, it's very important to be well-rounded with that. And I don't know, I hope that answers your question.
That sounds like a lot of work. I mean, what if I just want to be an average tennis player? Do you have something for that?
Yeah, I mean, do you belong to a health club? Are you working out regularly?
No, I mean, I was just kidding, but I used to work out, but, you know, I had different goals in mind, so
right.
I'm trying to get back into it now. I'm just kind of wondering how I should be going about it, but I think did answer my question.
Okay, you know, so, I mean, basically, if you just want to kind of stay in shape and have fun with your tennis, you know, when you go to the health, are you going to go to a health club or work out at home? What are you going to do?
At home, but we have weights set.
You have weights? Do you have any kind of aerobic activity, like a stationary bike, rowing machine, treadmill, something like that?
Yeah, we have a jump rope.
A jump rope?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, you know, here's what you do. You always want to warm your muscles up a little bit. So, you know, start with maybe like 25, 30 jumping jacks. Spend a good 10 minutes stretching after that. There's a great book called Stretching by Bob Anderson, which will teach you the really correct way to stretch so that you don't injure yourself and stretch in ways that you shouldn't, and lay out a nice routine for you based upon whatever sport you're going to play. And then go ahead and hit your weights, do all your muscle groups. So you always start with your largest muscle groups first, go into your smaller muscle groups second. So you might want to start with a leg extension followed by a leg curl, maybe do a bench press followed by a row type exercise, a military press and then a lat pull down, then maybe some biceps and triceps. And then after that, do some aerobic work. You can then go a little faster on your rope, or maybe you want to go out and do some running if the weather's nice, or even if it's not, you don't mind going outside. You know, go out for a run. And when you go out for your run, don't just jog at a steady pace. Mix it up sometimes with a little throw some sprints in, do a little backward running, do some side-to-side shuffles, and just kind of mix up your movements so you don't become stagnant with what you do. How's that?
All right, well, that's pretty good. So you think instead of doing, for instance, weight training one day, then aerobic exercise the next day, you should mix it all up in one workout?
You can. You know, you'd want to get at least 20 minutes of aerobic exercise in every day, if you can, which is great. I mean, that's just good for your health. Surgeon General says you should do it twice a week, but, you know, I mean, if you're going to be out there playing and being competitive, you probably should try to get something more often than that. You can get everything in one day. You can alternate also. A lot of it depends upon your time. If you have 2-3 hours, yeah, do it all, except for the weight training. Although, oh, boy, I went to a course in Miami about 10 years ago, and all the lecturers were NBA team doctors. And the guy from the Chicago Bulls said that the reason Michael Jordan was in as good a shape as he was is he worked out every single day of his professional basketball career. Even on game days, he was in the weight room working out, which is just amazing. But if you get into that type of mentality and you can get into that great physical condition, then you can do it. All of us with jobs and families, that might be next to impossible. So I guess you just have to budget your time as whatever's best for your schedule and your lifestyle.
All right.
Any other questions, Joe?
No, I think they covered it.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And let's go on to our last panelist, who is John. And John had a couple of different topics on his mind and was going to just kind of pick one as you know, we'll see where he goes with this. John, what do you think? What's your question for Dr. Jack?
Well, I had about 16 questions, 15 of which Dr. Jack probably already answered for us. So I'll go to the 16th. And that is, and bear with me here, like I said, I'm 47 years old. I've had lots of experience with lots of different injuries. I had 18 months of golfer's elbow. I've had hip muscle problems that have kept me out for weeks at a time. A little bit of reoccurring knee tendonitis or tendinosis. I don't really know. So here's my question. There are all kinds of sports and injury information we get from all kinds of sources, and it starts on the courts. All of your friends seem to know exactly what's wrong with you when you tell them about your injury, especially with tennis elbow. We have all kinds of information on the internet. You know, like you said, we can Google these articles. We can go onto websites like Ian's and talk to you, Dr. Jack. We can go to our primary physicians, who usually only have about 15 minutes to spend with us, and their answer always seems to be, stop playing tennis. Or you can go to a sports injury specialist or a physical therapist, where they tend to take more time and really figure out your problem. And as I get older, you know, I have different degrees of injury, a little nag here, something that will keep me off the courts for weeks at a time. With all this information, Dr. Jack, how do we become informed, cautious, sensible consumers of this information? Because I know a lot of it's bad information.
Okay, first of all, when you're talking to your armchair quarterback doctors on the tennis court, remember, a little knowledge is dangerous.
Absolutely.
So that's my first bit of advice. The second is WebMD is a very reputable website, and you can always go there to get reliable information. So to just look something up, you should be able to find some good information from WebMD. And that's a free website. There's plenty of advertising on it, which is why it's free. And so that's a good source of information. And then if you go to your primary care doctor and he's not that well versed in sports injuries, ask for a consultation or a referral to a sports medicine specialist, and they'll usually be more willing to spend the time and really tease out exactly what's wrong with you, and I think you'd get a lot of information from there. And I'd say that would be the approach to go with.
Well, that was too easy.
It was real easy. And you know what? You can always just get a hold of me through the website, which is fine. But you know, everyone's had a little situation, and what's, you know, good for Peter is not necessarily good for Paul, especially
right.
When it comes to injuries. You know, someone may have a tendonitis, which is not a tendinosis, which is not a tendon tear. And so a correct diagnosis is always paramount to the proper treatment.
Excellent. Excellent. And I know what you mean about the court doctors, because anybody who's had tennis elbow will quickly learn that there are 15 different silver bullet cures from fellow players.
Sure. And you know, and there's a lot of stuff out there, and there's a lot of things that I have to use in my medical armamentarium to treat someone based upon their severity, their duration of their injury, what I may see on a musculoskeletal ultrasound. So there's a lot of different factors that come into play when it comes to treating someone. I mean, are you going to give them an anti-inflammatory, or is that not good because they have some other medical condition which would make that contraindicated? Do you use, now there's topical anti-inflammatory jellies and patches, but if someone's got a tendinosis where this has been a problem for, you know, months, then, you know, that's a waste of time. That's not going to work. You see people walking around with the tennis elbow braces. Well, that's relieving the pain, but it's not really treating the problem. So, there's a lot of things that you have to consider before you make the cure-all statement.
And do you recommend that people really take the time to inform themselves rather than just looking for a quick, easy fix? Because you know, it can be frustrating when you're hurt and you're off the court and you can't seem to find the solution to your problem.
Sure. No, I think if you go to a good sports medicine specialist, that you should be able to get right down to the proper diagnosis and get the treatment. You know, I'm fortunate enough to have a musculoskeletal ultrasound machine in my office, which is really, and I probably told Ian this about a year ago, it's my new favorite toy, because I can get the answer on a musculoskeletal injury that you would pretty much get from an MRI scan, and I can do it right in my office without having the aggravation of doing the referral and getting insurance authorization and having the patients waste the time to go get the MRI and then come back for me to review it. And there's a lot of time lost with that, as opposed to being able to just come in, do a good history, a good physical exam, and that'll pretty much tell you, give you a 90% certainty of what's going on, and then you can do an ultrasound, and then you can see whether or not it's a tendinosis or a tear, and then go ahead with your treatment. So it really helps expedite the whole process. So if you can find someone that's well versed in these kind of things, that's really gonna help your cause, and you're not gonna be tied down with all these, oh well, somebody said to try this or try that, or put this certain liniment on my elbow and it's gonna heal it up in no time, or sleep with six clover leaves under my ear and that heals my tennis elbow, because you hear all kinds of things. But if you just get to a good specialist, then they can figure out what's wrong with you and get you treated and on the way and really help. And sometimes you just have a problem that's gonna take a while. Sometimes it's just tincture of time, and you do have to shut down for a while. And I'll never tell anyone to stop playing. In fact, I had a patient that I saw just this past week who came into the office to see me for his yearly physical, and I walked into the room with a big grin, and he looked at me and he said, "You accomplished your goal." And I said to him, "What was that?" He said, "You got me back on the tennis court." He had had some arthritis in his hip and was just really debilitating him, and he stopped playing tennis. And I said, why aren't you playing anymore? Why did you stop?" He goes, "Well, my hip's killing me." I said, "Well, we got to get after that. That's not an acceptable response." And he went through a series of about 5 prolotherapy injections in his hip, and now he's 90% better, and he played most of the summer, and he was happy as a clam. So you just have to find somebody that's going to be on the same philosophical page with you and really, be a sports nut, kind of like myself, and is willing to get you back into the game, provided that it's safe for you to go back. And there's people that will blow out their ACL and want to go skiing next week, and I say, well, that's just not going to happen. So you always have to be reasonable about things also.
Good stuff. Anything else, John, to follow up with that?
No, that's about as thorough an answer as I could expect. So thank you, Dr. Jack.
Sure, it's my pleasure.
All right. Great stuff. Well, we're going to wrap up the show with that. And I first off want to thank very much our question asking panelists, John, Joe, Angie, and Royce. Thank you guys so much for spending time with myself and Dr. Jack. We really appreciate it. And I'm sure our listeners appreciate it very much as well, especially those who may have had some of the same questions or same problems. This information will be very helpful to them. And of course, thank you, Dr. Jack, as well for coming on the show. Great to have you here as always, and I look forward to having you back on the show again soon.
Yeah, it was a great time. I really enjoyed it. Thanks, everyone, for joining in, asking the questions. It was really a lot of fun. And I would just ask, when you guys write questions to me on the forum, when you have your injuries, try to give me as much information as possible. Things that are really important are, how long have you had the problem? Be as specific as you can as to where the pain is, what causes it, what makes it better, and that really helps me out. Some of you have asked me some really great questions, and I think we've been able to narrow down some problems, and it's been a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, everybody listening, if you have any specific injury questions or anything having to do with sports medicine, Dr. Jack has his own section of the forums. Just go to EssentialTennis.com, click on Forum, and you'll see his own section listed there. People ask him questions all the time, and Dr. Jack is kind enough to spend time there as well, answering questions from listeners. So, Dr. Jack, thanks again, and take care. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right, that brings episode number 84 of the Essential Tennis Podcast to a close. Thank you very much for joining me today. And again, thank you to my guests on the show this week, Dr. Jack, as well as our other panelists. And in wrapping up today's episode, I want to do a couple of shout-outs and kind of recognitions here of members of the Essential Tennis Forums, as well as one other person. And as people continue to listen to this show and participate on the forums and other things that Essential Tennis does, they continue to improve. And that's really the whole point of the show and the website, is for people to get better at tennis. So I want to share a couple of success stories here. First of all, Brian in Nebraska, he first joined the forums when he was having some mental tennis issues and had really never won a singles match before. And this was several months ago. Well, for the first time in his life, he not only just won a tennis match, but he double bageled his opponent. He won 6-0, 6-0, which absolutely takes a great deal of concentration and mental toughness. So I wanted to say good job to Brian. Also, I want to give a shout out to Rob, who lives in the UK, and he wrote on the forums and said, "You may have read my previous post about the set I won off a friend who I couldn't win against come hell or high water. Well, today I didn't just win one set, I won in straight sets. I feel as though my consistency is improving greatly, thanks to all of you guys who have been giving me help, especially Ian with the podcast and mental toughness and avoiding choking. Thanks, guys." Great job, Rob. Excellent work, and very encouraging to hear that this is somebody that he's played many, many times and hadn't even taken a set from and just beat in straight sets. So that's awesome. One more person, and that's Bibi, who just won her first tournament. It was a mixed 3.0/3.5 tournament put on by the city where she lives. And it wasn't a USTA tournament, so she doesn't feel like it's quite official, quote unquote. But still awesome that she was able to get out there and play other competitive players around her level and come away with first place. So that's great. And one more person, and this person is not on the forums, but I want to give him a thank you. His name is Andrew Yoder in North Carolina. I did a racket giveaway about a week or two ago, and it turns out there were two Andrew Yoders who entered into that Babolat racket giveaway. And the Andrew Yoder in North Carolina was kind enough to withdraw, and could have really been trouble since there were two Andrew Yoders who, with the exact same name, who had actually entered. And there was some confusion there, but he was kind enough to withdraw his name, and I'm going to be sending him some strains for his kindness. And congrats to Andrew Yoder in Ohio, who actually won the racket. All right, that does it for this week. Thanks very much for tuning in, everybody. Take care, and good luck with your tennis.